Hey guys, welcome back to Shakedown Shan. Hope you all had a great week. I've had a very busy week again, no surprise. I've been doing so much social networking, and again, like I keep telling you all, I'm getting great feedback, just a lot of great content ideas from you guys too, and I really do appreciate it. I've done a lot of research the last few days too. I've been reading. I have a lot of stuff to go over today, and I probably won't get through it all, but we'll try. So today I want to talk about a little bit of hypocrisy that's been going on just with the whole Middle Eastern conflict. It's just been a whole path of lies since the beginning to get over there. And so anyway, I have this article pulled. It's an article about a war reporter who goes to the Middle East and reports over there what's been going on. He's been doing this for years. His name is Robert Fisk, and he recently went to Syria after the alleged chemical attack happened, and he wrote about his findings. And so Zero Hedge did a article on his findings and has some excerpts, and it's kind of a long article, but I think it's really important. I've read it two or three times now, and I was highlighting things through it as I'm going, of things to tell you guys, and it was just all mind-blowing to me that I'm like, you know what, I'm going to read the whole thing to you. So today's going to be a little bit of story time, and with some of my input. So anyway, let's get going. So, like I said, this is from Zero Hedge, and they're talking about Robert Fisk. He is a British journalist, and his findings over in Syria are pretty impressive, like the amount of stuff he was able to find out that mainstream media hadn't commented on at all, really. Okay, so here we go. Robert Fisk's bombshell first-hand account for the UK Independent runs contrary to nearly every claim circulating in major international press concerning what happened just over a week ago on April 7th. This article, by the way, was posted April 17th. So any new information that has come out, bear with me on that, because this is just relating to everything we knew up to the 17th. Let's see, where was I? Just over a week ago, on April 7th, in an embattled suburb outside Damascus, not only has the veteran British journalist found no evidence of a mass chemical attack, but he's encountered multiple local eyewitnesses who experienced the chaos of that night, but who say the attack never happened. Fisk was the first Western journalist to reach and report from the site of the alleged chemical weapons attack, widely blamed on Assad's forces. Writing from Douma, I'm not really sure how they pronounce it over there. I'm just a stupid American. What do I know? Anyway, in eastern Gouda?
I don't know. How's this? What letters are in there?
Gouta. I don't know. I took Spanish, not
Gouda. I don't know. Yeah, I took Spanish too.
Fisk has interviewed a Syrian doctor who works at the hospital, shown in one of the well-known videos, which purports to depict victims of a chemical attack. Importantly, the report published late in the day Monday is causing a stir among mainstream journalists who, minutes after the Saudi-sponsored jihadist group accused the Syrian army of gassing civilians, began uncritically reporting the Assad gassed his own people narrative as an already cemented and proven fact based on the mere word of a notoriously brutal armed group who itself has admitted to using chemical weapons on the Syrian battlefield in prior years. So this is important to me right here because, I mean, you can do all the research you want. You really have to read in between the lines of all the research you do. You're going to read things on one side and read things on another side. And it's really up to you to try to pick apart the truth and if you can find any at all. And so anyway, it makes me upset a little that people, like it says, minutes after the alleged attack are reporting as if they completely know. I feel like people should give it time, learn stuff about it, and report actual facts. Anyway, so these reports were from a anti-Assad group, a jihadist group, and we, of course, are going to take that and use it as an excuse to fire up propaganda against Assad. This is one of the regions that we have left in this plan of regime change. I think it was back in the 90s it started. They decided they were going to start this regime change idea. They had seven countries they wanted to go in and overthrow the regimes, and Syria is one of the ones left to go into. And what a perfect excuse, right? So anyway, also notable is that no journalist or international observer was anywhere near Douma when the purported chemical attack took place. Controversy ensued immediately after Fisk's report, especially as he is among the most recognizable names in the past four decades of Middle East war reporting, having twice won the British Press Awards Journalist of the Year Prize and seven times winner of the British Press Awards Foreign Correspondent of the Year. The New York Times has referred to him as the most famous foreign correspondent in Britain, while The Guardian has called him one of the most famous journalists in the world. An Arabic speaker, Fisk became famous for being among the few reporters in history to conduct face-to-face interviews with Osama bin Laden, which he did on three occasions between 1993 and 1997. I think he's crazy. I wouldn't do that. But I mean, if you're a journalist, you got to get out there and find out some way. You got to go from one extreme to the next, get your information from what appear to be the good people and the bad, and then somewhere come along the middle.
That's right.
The truth lies in between somewhere. Anyway, Fisk says he was able to walk around and investigate newly liberated Douma without Syrian government or Russian minders. In part, this is likely because he has reported from inside Syria going back decades in war-torn 1982 Hama, for example. And he begins his account as follows, and here's an excerpt from his findings. This is a story of a town called Douma, a ravaged, stinking place of smashed apartment blocks and of an underground clinic whose images of suffering allowed three of the Western world's most powerful nations to bomb Syria last week. There's even a friendly doctor in a green coat. When I track him down in the very same clinic, cheerfully tells me that the gas, and gas is in quotations, videotape, which horrified the world despite all the doubters, is perfectly genuine. We'll get into that in a minute. So, side note, he's talking about how ravaged and smashed up this place is. And let me tell you, that's because of us. So we're over there bombing them.
And England.
And France. All the superpowers of the world are over here just raining bombs on the Middle East. And this is what happens. We just completely destroy everything. Going on. So the video is genuine, that it the video took place there. But as we read into this more, you'll see what he's trying to say. War stories, however, have a habit of growing darker. For the same 58-year-old senior Syrian doctor then adds something profoundly uncomfortable. The patients, he says, were overcome not by gas, but by oxygen starvation in the rubbish-filled tunnels and basements in which they lived, on a night of wind and heavy shelling that stirred up a dust storm. So something about this place that you need to know is that Dumas has like this underground tunnel system because it their city is just destroyed. So these people are in underground tunnel systems, and the night of this gas attack, there was a huge windstorm that stirred up a bunch of dust, got into the tunnels, and people started suffocating and running to the clinic. And you'll see as we go on what else he has to say. But that's just so you know the setting, what's going on. Fisk goes on to identify the doctor by name, Dr. Asim Rahibani. I'm sorry if you're listening to me right now, Asim. Please call me. Tell me how to say your name. Anyway. So this is also important because it says this is notable given that all early reporting from Duma relied on unnamed doctors and anonymous opposition sources for early claims of a chlorine gas attack, lately morphed into an unverified mixed chlorine and sarin attack. So our mainstream media never acknowledged their sources. They never gave names. They were all unnamed, anonymous sources. Nobody could go do the research on who they were or try to find other research correlating who they were talking about. Robert Fisk actually identifies this doctor by name who was there treating these victims, you would say. So the doctor's testimony is consistent with that of the well-known Syrian opposition group, Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, the SOHR, which initially reported, based on its own pro-rebel sourcing, that heavy government bombardment of a Duma city resulted in the collapse of homes and underground shelters, causing civilians in hiding to suffocate. According to SOHR, which has long been a key go-to source for mainstream media all over the course of the war, 70 of them, women and children, have suffered suffocation as a result of the demolition of home basements over them due to heavy and intense shelling. Though outlets from The Guardian to The Washington Post to The New York Times have quoted SOHR on a near daily basis throughout the past 6 years of war, the anti-Assad opposition outlets reporting of mass asphyxiation due to collapse of shelters has been notably absent from the same publications. So, weird, when you print out these things, something's wrong with my printer and it hides the words from me.
Now, as you know, after you get through a little bit, I always play anti-advocate against you.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I've got some things that I've been researching while you're giving, so I'll just put it out and you can...
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You know, it's good to have somebody that is able to...
just bounce things off back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps the conversation.
Sure.
It really does. And I've been telling everybody on Facebook to invite people to the page that don't really agree or align with our libertarian views because it adds good, meaningful conversation. And
you know, we have a phone number that they can call in, and they'll be able to talk over the computer. So maybe we'll get that set up for next week.
Yeah, I do have two people that are interested in calling in sometime.
Okay.
I mentioned it to them, and they said they'd be interested. So I said we would get working on that soon.
Yeah, if you go to SaratogaBroadcasting.com, on the front page, the phone number is there. And it's a Skype phone number, so I've got it on the computer. And
cool
it'll
beans.
Ring here on this computer and go over here so that it's on live on the air. So we'll get that set up for next week, and we'll be able to take phone calls.
Good. Okay. I've seen an interest in it this week from listeners, and I would be more than happy to get you on the show, talking and asking questions, giving feedback. Maybe you know something that I don't know, and you know I'm always up for learning. So let me figure out what's behind this block here, because I don't remember. Oh, Fisk details the Syrian doctor's testimony, who was adamant in his emphasis that civilians suffocating en masse and were not gassed. So then it goes to another excerpt from Fisk. It was a short walk to Dr. Rahabani. I'm going to call him Asim again because I can't say his last name. Asim, Dr. Asim, from the door of his subterranean clinic, Point 200 it's called. In the weird geology of this partly underground city is a corridor leading downhill where he showed me his lowly hospital and the few beds where a small girl was crying as nurses treated a cut above her eye. I was with my family in the basement of my home. This is quotes from the doctor. I was with my family in the basement of my home, 300 meters from here on the night. But all the doctors know what happened. There was a lot of shelling, and aircraft was always over Douma at night. But on this night, there was a windstorm, dust storm, and huge dust clouds began to come into the basements and cellars where people lived. People began to arrive here suffering from hypoxia, oxygen loss. Then someone at the door, a white helmet, shouted gas, and a panic began. People started throwing water over each other. Yes, the video was filmed here, so it is genuine, but what you see is not a gas attack, but merely people suffering from hypoxia, not gas poisoning. So this relates to the why you can't yell fire in a crowded room. You start hysteria, and people believe you. And this is the scenario, if you couldn't follow along with me. These doctors are in their underground clinics. People start rushing in because they can't breathe. They're hyperventilating. They're suffering from suffocation from this dust storm, this big dust storm coming into their tunnels. And then what a perfect opportunity. These white helmets come in, start shouting gas, and then that drives hysteria. People start throwing buckets of water on each other, and what a perfect opportunity for them to take a video completely out of context and start sharing it. That's where we get the video of this gas attack. In addition to interviewing a doctor while standing in the very hospital featured in White Helmet's footage of the events, Fisk cites the testimonies of multiple locals in the following. Before we go any further, readers should be aware that this is not the only story in Douma. There are many people I talked to amid the ruins of the town who said they never believed in gas stories, although they have happened in the past, which were usually put about, they claimed, by the armed Islamist groups. So, yes, Assad has gassed his people before. It's no secret. He's done it. He's a terrible person. He's a dictator. He's not by any means a great human being. Neither is the rebel group that we support either. They gas them as well. Mm-hmm. It's just this back and forth, back and forth gassing attack of these people. And you can never be sure of who it is. But these people are saying that that night there was no gas attack. And the doctors haven't found chemical residue on these people, which we'll get into. And CNN kind of, they're not credible at all, but they debunked it themselves without realizing they debunked it. It's pretty funny. We'll get into it in a minute. But it's just crazy that even if there was a gas attack, we still wouldn't be able to prove who did it.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been Assad, or it could have been the rebel group that we help, that we supply weapons to, that we supply chemical weapons to. So even if this gas attack did happen, we don't know who it is. There's no way to prove who it was. And I personally don't think it happened. Did you add something, Dad?
Yeah. I wanted to just, there's an outfit over there called the Violations Documentation Center. And one of the doctors who investigate said that he told Violation Center that the symptoms that he saw on his patients do not resemble chlorine attack symptoms. Chlorine alone cannot induce such symptoms because suffocation, because although it does cause suffocation, it does not affect the nerves as another type of gas would. And this was the first thing. But he said, there were symptoms indicative of organic phosphorus compounds in the sarin gas category, but the smell of chlorine was also present in the place that they visited to document. And he said that the doctors in this group said they saw symptoms on people that include pinpoint pupils, slow heartbeat, slow breathing, heavy foaming from the mouth and nose, and burning of the cornea areas. So something had to induce that. And I think you would say that it would have to be some sort of gas, whatever, either a combination of chlorine and whatever the other one, serine gas, but by who? We don't know. You know, I mean, I think mm-hmm. it's, I honestly believe that it happened, but I wouldn't be able to say who did it with authority. And I don't think anybody can, because you're pitting one group against another.
And they're just as bad.
And they're just as bad as each other. And I mean, gas warfare has been
around
made
forever.
Illegal. Yeah, but it's forever, been but. Made illegal since World War I, when the Germans used nerve gas against the Allied forces, and they banned it and said they'd never use it in war again. So,
but here we are.
But here we are. You know, and I think you can make it. Anybody can make it.
Yeah, you find the right chemist.
And in wars, the rules are kind of like obscure.
Yeah, as much as people say it's organized warfare, it's all guerrilla tactics. Especially when we start arming these rebel groups, and we've done it so many times. Al-Qaeda, that was us,
right? And in that Nicaragua, was us. And then it rebels, turned on us. The rebels we sent guns to. And I mean, I always heard when I was growing up, and we were at war against someone, or we would always supply the opposite group with weapons. And it always seemed that they would turn on us with our own weapons.
Yes. And history repeats itself.
Right.
Like, well, I don't understand how these people just don't learn from these mistakes.
Because they hate each other is what the thing is. I mean, hate is a terrible thing, and it can get out of control. we see what's going on in our own country.
Yeah.
And hate's a powerful tool. And these groups have been fighting, like we talked before the show, for thousands and thousands of years. They're the same religion, the same nationality, basically, Middle Eastern, but there's a group that hates the other group.
Wars have been going on there for so long. The Crusades were 1,000 years long.
I know.
A religious war. Yeah. The Christians and the Muslims, that was 1,000 years of fighting. That's right. There. And it's just, this area has just been torn apart by war all of its life. And I don't understand how the main superpowers of the world think getting involved over there is going to make any kind of difference.
No.
It's all considered humanitarian. Oh, these people are bad to their citizens, these dictators and everything. Okay, what can we really do about it?
Well, if you take
the answer is not bombing them.
No. If you take those leaders out, somebody else will come in and do the same thing.
Yes, when you take these leaders out, it opens up this vacuum. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with physics, but when you create a vacuum, everything pours into it that's around it. It's crazy. And so you create this vacuum. You got all this power vacuum. You got all these rebel groups and terror groups and just terrible, terrible people that want this power, and they all start flowing into this power vacuum. Mm-hmm. And somebody worse comes up.
Right.
And so we're not helping anything. The most we can do, I don't know what the answer is as far as resolving these humanitarian issues over there, but I know it's not war. I know it's not bombing these people. And you can go over, you can help, do as much as you can. It's a little bit of a difference. Your organizations or non-for-profit groups or whatever, go over, help these people.
But donate. They're the ones, the people aren't the ones that end up getting the money. It's the people that run the country. I mean, see, there's nothing we can do over there to help anybody.
Right, and people are like, what do you mean we can't do anything?
I mean, it's just like, and I get really irritated, and probably, you know, but it's like the hurricane that knocked out Puerto Rico's electrical grid. Well, what people don't realize is that their electric grid was in bad condition for
to begin
years.
With.
And we gave them, I think, a total of $60 billion to repair that.
I believe that's right. I believe hearing that.
And who ended up with that money was the leaders of Puerto Rico. The electrical grid got nothing, no repairs whatsoever. So a hurricane comes through and knocks out whatever they had. They ask us for more money. And since they're a territory, we can't give them money. We have to loan it to them because they never paid back the first. So we give them another $5 billion. Well, where did that go?
And not to the power thing. Grid. It just went out again.
That's right. They kept they're being brought up on charges now. The governor of the island and the senator that made a big deal about things. So it's like you keep pouring money into things. It doesn't solve the problem.
No, it doesn't. Know? It's like you... Yes, these terrible things happen around the world, and we feel terrible about them, but we can't keep spending trillions of dollars on things and millions of lives on things. Just loaning people money is not the answer.
No.
Going to war is not the answer.
No.
And I hate to say do nothing, but until we can find an answer, maybe we should spend time on trying to come up with ways to help instead of just rushing into something that we're not sure what it's going to do.
And maybe spending some of that money on our own people that are hanging by a thread, like in the Appalachians and, in poor states that really have it tough. I mean, use that money for us. It's our money. We paid in taxes, and which I know you hate too, which is I dislike it myself, but that's our money.
Yes, I'm not a fan of wealth redistribution, but I'd rather have it go to, if we're paying these taxes, I'd rather have it go to us than to go to these Tomahawk missiles.
Exactly. Which costs $1 million a piece.
Yes. So. Yes. That's crazy. I think it was 1.4 million
okay.
per Tomahawk missile. And we dropped, what was it, 60?
No, it was like 108.
108.
And they all found their targets. So you 108 times 1.4 million.
Yeah, do the math. I didn't go to school for math.
Right.
Do the math, guys.
So you go on. I don't want to take up your time.
Yeah, we got sidetracked.
But if you need me, right, if you need an argument or a disagreement or an agreement or some info,
it's good though. It's good though. Rabbit holes are good.
That's right.
I like rabbit holes. My public speaking class in high school was all about finding the rabbit holes because that's what creates conversation.
Sure.
Okay, so. Let's see here. So Fisk goes on to cite the testimonies of multiple locals in the following. He says, before we go any further, readers should be aware. Oh, okay, I think I read that. I did read that. Let's see, these particular jihadists. All right. So the story of Duma is thus not just a story of gas or no gas, as the case may be or not be. It's about thousands of people who did not opt for evacuation from Duma on buses that left last week alongside the gunmen with whom they had to live like prisoners for months in order to survive. Yes, these people live like prisoners. The underground tunnels that these people had to dig, that the white helmets, the British people that are supposed to be the good people, made them dig out. It's so much hypocrisy everywhere. They're treating these citizens like prisoners over there. And it's crazy. It's their own town. They're citizens of this place. And so anyway, Fisk says, I walked across this town quite freely yesterday without soldier, policeman, or reminder to haunt my footsteps, just two Syrian friends, a camera, and a notebook. I sometimes had to clamber across 20-foot-high ramparts, up and down almost sheer walls of earth. Happy to see foreigners among them, happier still that the siege is finally over. They are mostly smiling, those whose faces you can see, of course, because a surprising number of Duma's women wear full-length black hijabs. Oddly, after chatting to more than 20 people, I couldn't find one who showed the slightest interest in Duma's role in being about the Western air attacks. Two actually told me they didn't know about the connection. So these people are being bombed by us in the three superpowers of the world, and they have no idea why. All they know is that these bombs are coming down where they live and they can't figure it out. It's no wonder why they hate us. No wonder why they hate us. They got our names on them. So, but it was a strange world I walked into. Two men, Hussam and Nizar Abu Aishi, said they were unaware how many people had been killed in Duma. Although the latter admitted he had a cousin executed by Jassi al-Islam, the Army of Islam, which is the army against Assad, for allegedly being close to the regime. They shrugged when I asked about the 43 people said to have died in the infamous Duma attack. They had no idea. These people just don't know anything that's going on. It's really just political warfare, and these civilians die at the cost of it. And let's see. I can't see behind this block on the paper. The White Helmets, who have played a dubious role throughout the war, while reporting themselves as impartial and neutral rescue workers and filmmakers, though known to operate exclusively in Al-Qaeda and other jihadist-controlled areas of Syria. Fisk reports the following. The White Helmets, the medical first responders, already legendary in the West, but with some interesting corners to their own story, played a familiar role during the battles. They are partly funded by the British Foreign Office, and most of the local offices were staffed by Duma men. I found the wrecked offices not far from Dr. What was his name? The one with the really hard last name.
Guza.
No, it started with an A and I forgot it already. Asim. Dr. Asim. Where was it? A gas mask had been left outside, a food canner with one eye pierced, and a pile of dirty military camouflage uniforms lay inside one room. Planted, I asked myself. No, I doubt it. The place was heaped with capsules, broken medical equipment, and files, bedding, and mattresses from previous events. Of course, we must hear their side of the story, too. But it won't happen here. A woman told us that every member of the White Helmets in Duma abandoned their main headquarters and chose to take the government-organized and Russian-protected buses to the rebel province of Idlib, with the armed groups when the final truce was agreed. Fisk further narrates the strangeness of some of the reporting now happening far outside of Duma, which flatly contradicts the testimonies of civilians inside that he encountered. Okay, so now he's going in to talk about CNN reporting and what was the other one? No, I think it was just CNN. One American News. Okay, so CNN had sent a reporter over. And we all know how I dislike CNN. It's just a complete mess. If you've ever watched it, it's people just start screaming at each other and nothing ever comes out. They just start calling each other names. Although I will say their articles online, still not credible and completely biased, are a lot better than their TV reporting. Because you don't have people screaming at you through your TV. Anyway, he's talking about how CNN sent a reporter over. This reporter found a young girl with a backpack, and she goes ahead and sniffs the backpack. Where is this? Let's see here. Okay, so the girl's backpack was claimed to have chlorine and sarin on it from the chemical attack. This reporter goes ahead and smells her backpack, and all she says is, hang on. Gotta find it here. I gave up on highlighting after a while because I said, oh. I'm just going to read this whole thing to you instead. She sniffs the backpack and she says, there's definitely something that stings. Okay, well, that's not proof. Because, what do you mean? I see you on the TV, you go over, smell a backpack. There's definitely something that stings. Okay, well, if there's chlorine and sarin on there, it's not just stinging your nose.
Right.
You're telling me that this so-called chemical on her backpack that you, right before you smelled it, said causes severe nerve damage, you're just going to smell it without knowing how much is on there? No, you're not going to. Because if you think that it's there, you're going to know that it's probably not safe to smell. But let me smell it anyway. There's definitely something on here. It stings my nose. So with the implication that empirical proof had been found, they decide to report this. CNN is like laughing stock. I hate mainstream news to begin with. CNN is just ridiculous. And I used to watch it. I used to watch it and till I realized that they just bang their war drums. Mm-hmm. And it's what it creates fear. And the media knows that. They are just pushers of fear. They just want us to be afraid of everything else so we can go ahead and support these wars. Everybody has agendas with politicians.
See, when I was growing up, it was a while ago, news media reported the news. Today, they make the news.
Yes, they make it. Exactly.
They make the news to report. So it's very confusing to people because what do you believe? Where years ago, they reported the news, and that's what they were. They were the media, and we trusted them to give us what was happening in the U.S. or around the world. Today, you can't.
No.
Because they're making up the news. They're making the news, and they're telling us what they want us to hear.
Yes, the days of muckraking and just super investigative journalism is gone.
There are a couple outlets left. I hear, well, like on the Hannity show, or there's a couple that run that I forget her name, Susan something or other, and her boss. They do investigative reporting, and they really tell you what they found. I mean, it's not like they make things up. It's what they found. And a lot of times there's a lot of facts behind it, but you don't hear it from the other news outlets because they don't want people to know that. And it's hard. You don't know where to get the news anymore.
No, you don't.
Except for here. You what you report.
So. I find things and I talk about them. That's what I do. I find things that nobody else is talking about, and it's all interesting. And like I said, when you find, when you're researching and you find an extreme on one side and an extreme on the other, you got to find the truth somewhere in the middle. And all you can do is just keep researching, keep learning, and you got to do it with an open mind too. Like I said, I don't know if these gas attacks happened or not. I've got information on one side, different information on another. I don't know what we can really prove. And what was I saying? I don't know if it happened, but if it did happen, like I said, we don't know who it is. And just claiming that Assad did it is irrational. Not to mention that Trump ran on saying we are not going to war with Syria. Mm-hmm. He ran on that. People voted for that because he didn't want that war. He said it was going to be bad. Why? Because Russia would not like that. And warring with Russia is not a good idea at all. You think war in the Middle East is bad? Wait until we end up in a war with Russia. They're just as strong as us. We need to pull out, come home, stop bombing people.
That's right.
And just no more war, no more bombs, no more death. We can't be doing this anymore. We pay with the lives of people. And these political leaders don't care. They don't care about us. They really don't. As much as they say they do, when it's campaign season, they don't. When you get really, really local into politics, yeah, a lot of them do care about you. Mm-hmm. But these big scale politicians, no, they could care less. They're in here for money. They're in here for power. And they are all war hawks. I don't care what president you put in power. They're all going to increase spending, and they're all going to drop bombs somewhere. They're going to get involved in a war somewhere. Going on. Let's see here. Yeah. So I made it through that. Anyway, so what I was saying was, what a perfect way to start a war in Syria. Claim Assad gassed his people. Okay, let's go do something about it. Drop bombs, start a war. It's kind of like lying our way into another war, just like we have every single Middle Eastern war. Oh, this place has weapons of mass destruction. Let's go in and fight them and kill people and bomb them. Oh, wait, we didn't find any. Just kidding. We had no proof. We were told wrong. So we're going to spread democracy. That's what we're doing over there. Okay, A, our country's not a democracy. And I've said this since the 10th grade. We are an oligarchy. And I highly suggest you go look that up, because you're going to read it and you're going to be like, oh my God, yes. So we're over there spreading democracy. We're not. We're really not. And who are we to be telling other people how to run their country? We can't even run our own country, right? Just leave people alone. I'm sorry. Yes, people are going to die over there. You know, I'm not a heartless person. I have a really big heart, but we can't be the parents of the world. We are the United States. We are not the supreme leader ruler of the world. And it's just crazy that our government has done some terrible things to people. If you haven't heard about Standing Rock, go look into that. If you don't know that we had Japanese internment camps, go look into that. Educate yourself. Come back to me. Tell me what you found. We took anybody with Japanese ancestry that were living in our country, and we put them into internment camps, and people died there. Hitler was a bad person. Guess what? We were doing not on as big of a scale as he was. We were doing almost the same thing, just taking people because of who they were and throwing them into these camps. Nobody bombed us because of that. I mean, Pearl Harbor was bombed, but this was took place after that. Nobody started bombing our country. Why? Because it's not their country. They weren't going to mess with us, A. And B, we went to their countries. And we started a war overseas, not on our land. Okay, so I have something here, actually, that as much as I don't like Trump, I am going to quote him a little bit, just because he did bring up a valuable point. He says, on December 8th, 2015, he said this, so it was a little while ago. He says, this is about his travel ban, his projected travel ban on Muslims, and how people were criticizing him. I don't think it's a great idea either. You can't stop people because of who they are from coming to a country that was based on immigration. But anyway, he goes, take a look at what FDR did many years ago. He did the same thing. President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed a 1942 executive order that sent more than 100,000 people of Japanese ancestry to internment camps. This is a president who was highly respected by all. They named highways after him. They named highways after this guy. But he sent these Japanese people to internment camps. And here we are telling someone that we don't even know if they gas their people or not, that they can't do that. But we expect people to not tell us what we're doing wrong. It's just, there's so much hypocrisy everywhere. And I can't stand it. It makes me very angry, guys. So let's see here. Um, So a main reason for just all of this is war hysteria. And, you know, the Supreme Court never overruled the decision of these Japanese internment camps, which is just crazy because coming from this article, I quote it, it says, it remains the words of Justice Robert Jackson's dissent, a loaded weapon ready for the hand of any authority that can bring forward a plausible claim of an urgent need. The Supreme Court never overruled the Japanese internment camp executive order, which means it's still considered legal, mm-hmm. still considered justifiable, which means any president in the future can do the same thing because it hasn't been overruled. And even if it does, if it had been overruled, if you had that much power, you could probably get away with it again, which is scary. Let's see. Okay, moving on. I know that's a lot of negativity to throw at you. So I'm going to throw a little positivity at you. All right. So I know I have a lot of listeners in New York, and then I have listeners spread out through the country. Like I said, it's cool to look at the map and see where you guys all are. But anyway, this is pertaining to New York, and if you're not from New York, you should still support this guy. So there's this guy running for governor of New York. Thank God, because Cuomo's gotta get out. I hate him. Andrew Cuomo is the worst. And his father was bad, too. Anyway, this guy named Larry Sharp is running for governor of New York on the Libertarian Party. Okay. And he's actually coming to the coffee house this weekend.
Oh, here?
Yeah, here.
Really?
Yeah.
What day?
Sunday.
Oh, I'm in New York.
Oh, the city.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you have a game.
Yeah, Yankee game.
I'm not going to be able to see him either, but I am getting involved in his campaign.
Okay.
Which is exciting. So, anyway.
Let's see what you can do. Once you get, you can have him do a call-in and maybe interview him for like 15 minutes.
That would be excellent. I think he would do it. He's been doing live stream videos on Facebook. I watched one the other day. He's got great ideas, guys. Let me tell you a little bit about who he is. He's a businessman, an executive coach and management consultant, a strategic consultant, for thought leaders in government, finance, law, technology, media, and healthcare, a teacher and guest instructor. He taught English, management, and business at Yale, Columbia, and John Jay College. He's a native New Yorker, Marine Corps veteran, husband, and a father to two daughters. He's known for developing other people into great leaders. He has about 15 years experience training and mentoring international executives, entrepreneurs, salespeople. He has a wealth of experience across a variety of industries. He empowers people to realize their full potential. As governor, he wants to empower New Yorkers to achieve prosperity and freedom in a new era of ethics and transparency. He wants you to know what the state government is doing. He doesn't want the government to be opaque. He wants it to be transparent. Larry will use his experience to guide the governorship into a position of transparency. I just read that one to you guys. Sorry. So Larry values duty, service, honesty, and loyalty that he got being in the Marine Corps. His experience imparted crucial skills like flexibility, resilience, discipline, and focus. With nearly 7 years of active duty and an honorable discharge, teamwork and strategic thinking are at Larry's core. He's attuned to the needs of veterans as well as to the value of human life and liberty. He wants to accomplish more with less. which is great. I think that goes into his tax ideas, less tax. He'll use this mindset to trim the fat in government while hiring the right talent to build a better New York. He's been all over New York. He said in his live video the other day on Facebook, Cuomo is a city person. He stays down there and doesn't really care about the rest of New York, which is so much bigger than the city. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's been in the executive mansion and the capital of New York, Albany, once.
I know. Like, the capital's not the city.
No.
The capital is Albany.
That's right.
Which is 25, 30 minutes from right here in this room.
That's right.
So Larry Sharp has been out west. He's going out west next week, I think. He's up here this weekend in Saratoga. He's in Albany today. I can't make it to his little meeting. I was invited to a meeting from his field director. And he's especially trying to reach out to farmers. Most of our land in New York is farmland. We have so many farms. He has a lot of great ideas on education. Let's get to education.
Well, just before you go there, the largest industry in Saratoga County, as I'm sure it is throughout the state, is agriculture, whether it be producing farms or horse farms where they breed horses and race horses, but it's agriculture. However, it's going down, you know, every couple of years because they take the properties and turn them into housing developments and that, which is not good. I mean, it's not
and
good
just all us. these tax burdens on farmers,
right?
Just really hurts them.
Yes,
they're trying to make New York better by being self-sufficient, growing food, having crops, having animals, cow farms. I might have to get to this in another show going on with Larry Sharp here. I'll try to get a few more things in. He has a core libertarian value, which most humans do. Most humans are pretty libertarian and just don't know it yet because we all have these core values of we don't hurt people, we don't take their stuff, not a lot of people believe in, or I shouldn't say that. Some people don't believe in the free market, but the free market is the best option, which I'll have to get into more with Larry Sharp and his views on the free market in a different episode. But he does take the core values of libertarianism very seriously, and he's trying to apply them in ways that are going to help New York. And he plans to reform education and tackle the problem of why so many college graduates are unemployed. He wants to help teachers by taking away some of their administrators, which the administrators won't be happy about. But, you know, these administrators make teaching so hard. There's just so much regulation on these teachers. He wants to free up the teaching atmosphere so teachers can teach meaningful content.
Right.
They're all teaching for tests, and it's absolutely ridiculous. Like,
and get back to basics.
Yeah. These teachers just, they have to teach for these tests, and some kids just aren't good test takers.
Right.
They aren't. I tutor a kid that he's very, very, very smart, and he can't take a test.
Right.
He can't do it, but if you ask him the questions give him the multiple choice answers, he'll give you the right answer. He'll get a 96 if you just tell him the test. You read everything to him. But if he has to sit down and look at it and actually take it in a time frame, he bombs it, and he knows all the answers.
Well, I'll tell you, I personally think the problem with education in New York is that we have too many administrators.
Yes.
And we're paying too much money out for administration
and not regulation. Enough out
for good teachers, so that right. and give them the tools to teach instead of, like you said, I hope this fellow, you know, he wants to eliminate the testing part. I just talked to a teacher today. She took the day off because she has to get ready for testing for a week. And she said, we've been working for 2 weeks getting ready for testing for a week. She said, these kids do nothing but get tested. And she goes, it's terrible. They're not learning anything. They're not learning
the core. No, they're just learning how to memorize right. things and spit it out.
And they're not learning the core subjects that will get you to the next level.
They're not learning how to think.
That's right. That's right.
That's a huge issue. Let's see here. I know I'm going to save the rest of this for another time when we can dive deep into it, because Larry Sharp is definitely worth getting into. I really hope he does a good job against Cuomo. I know so many people are sick of Cuomo, and I think he could do some really great things. So thank you for listening, and I'll be seeing you guys next week. So positive vibes, guys.